worked with a mother and a teenage boy. He was totally out of control. Totally out of control. He was, I think at the time, 14 and a half. He was involved in drugs, and some of the drugs were heavy. He was sexually promiscuous. He was breaking all kinds of religious rules and breaking all kinds of civil rules as well. He was on the edge of always being kicked out of school. He was obnoxious and often quite chutzpahdik. Really a real pleasure. And Mom walks in with him and says, you know, we're going to tell you a lot of things that we're upset about, but I want to tell you one thing first. And she made me cry. Because what she said is, I have to tell you about this boy. He had an earring, he had hair, and it looked like it was a tattoo. He was a disaster. He said, there's an older woman that lives in our block. This boy is always the first one out of the house. Whenever she comes home from anywhere, he always helps her up the stairs. He always helps her in with her packages. He goes to visit nursing homes because he likes elderly people. I'm looking at him, what? And I knew that this family was going to be okay. Because Mom had the ability to not be blinded by all the dark stuff. She could still see the light. And that's a hard thing to do. Because if our kids don't act in the ways we want them to act, we tend to go the other way. All we see is the black. They're so obnoxious, don't listen, always give me an argument. What about all the good stuff they do? Well, I can't find anything good. Well, it's your job as a parent to find something good, and it has to be real. Not, I really like the gym shoes they buy. Or they have good taste in earrings. You need to figure out something they do good. And you know what? Sometimes it's hard. And sometimes it may even feel impossible. And if you feel like it's impossible, you have to, like, keep on looking. Keep on looking. Because sometimes people will say to me, well, he's not being very loyal to the family, but he's really a wonderful friend. His friends are all drug dealers. It's a hard one. So what do I mean? Does that mean you should ignore the other stuff? Of course not. And the mother said clearly, we're here to do a bit hard work. This kid is in trouble. But I don't want to forget for a moment that he's got a heart of gold. He's hurting, but he's got a heart of gold. And he's doing things that are really hurting the family. And they did. They came back. And that kid turned around. But it took a few years. But Mom never gave up. So the sparkle in a parent's eyes, it's something that builds self-esteem. It's something that builds the sense of that a child often feels, I'm not good enough. We live in a society that's a lot of pressure. It's incredibly pressured in different ways for boys and girls. Girls all feel like they have to look like Britney. And if they don't, and I'm talking about even religious girls feel this way, even Orthodox Jewish girls will feel like they have to, like, be gorgeous and so skinny. And that's why we're literally in an epidemic of eating disorders throughout, really, the entire teenage world, including the Jewish teenage world. There's a really good book, I'm sure you've heard of it, Reviving Ophelia, about teenage girls, very beautiful and very powerful. And boys have their own pressures. And peer pressures are incredibly hard. And as I said, you know, in last class, it's about building a relationship that will help these kids get through. There's no guarantees. But the best shot we could give our kid is to have a relationship with their parents that they feel is strong, is secure, and is safe. Safe means my parents won't hurt me intentionally. Or if they do sometimes, they lose it, they'll take responsibility and make it prove to me that they didn't mean it. There's a sense of warmth and a sense that my parents are proud of me even if I'm not perfect. Having said that, that's kind of the soft side of the equation. I have to say something because it's so important. Because I've seen parents that have neglected their job through being too tough. And I've also worked with many parents that are too soft. Who abdicate their parental role. And that's number four. To have firm, expectations of our child, to have family values that are important. If you follow, you know, Judaism, to make that the value of your home and to make that something that the kids believe is real. Because sometimes, you know, parents will say, will tell their kids, we follow all Jewish law here. And of course, as soon as the parents are out of the room, the kid will give me all the list of the things that the parents are doing. And it doesn't make a difference, but kids are, hypocrisy is deadly. And that doesn't mean you need to be perfect, but at least it has to be real. But whatever your values are, the values can't just be for your kids. You know, so if you say in this house, honesty, you always have to tell me the truth. Do you live a life of truth? You know, do you live a life of truth? Do your kids know that you don't lie? Do your kids know that, you know, the tax returns are straight? You do taxes in Toronto? Because if you don't, maybe we'll move here. You know, are you straight? Are you straight? Are you straight? And if you have values about wanting to be respected, do they see that you respect others? One of the most deadly things of losing a relationship with a child is if parents don't talk respectfully to each other. This is not about respecting the child. This is about mutual respect in the family. Boys and girls have told me that they can't, yeah, my father's actually kind of nice to me, but he's such a jerk to my mother. It's gone. They lose it. They lose respect for parents. And so what do you do if you don't have such a great marriage? Well, you have to work. You have to, number one, you have to work on your marriage, because that's part of parenting too. You have to find time not only for each of your children, you have to find time for your marriage. But number two is that the kids know that no matter what, even if mom and dad don't always agree, but they have mutual respect. They treat each other with respect. But back to firm guidance, that we have values and that we have rules and that the rules have some flexibility, but there are certain rules that don't have flexibility. And the rules have to make some sense with some consistency, although they don't have to make perfect sense. And your child doesn't have to agree with the rules. And if mother and father, if it's a single parent family, if the father or the mother, whichever one is the parent that's in charge, says this is when curfew is, then within maybe a 15-minute window, because they'll push it, that's it. That's it, with clear consequences, not to be afraid to say no. I've never seen a relationship never seen a relationship get ruined because parents fairly said no. Relationships get ruined when they say no with a bat in their hand. Or they say no with like losing control. No is no. Don't take it personally. Say no the way Calvin's mother says no to him. And Calvin and Hobbes. Like, no. It's just no. I'm not going to take it personally. I'm staying up. I'm going to watch TV all night. No, you're not. No, you're not. Don't take it personally. Strong. No. I had a boy that I worked with many years ago who told me that he lost all respect for his parents because they never said no to him. They were very wealthy. Very, very wealthy. And instead of them giving him time, they gave him money. So he had his own credit card at the age of 15. And nobody checked the bills. They just paid the bills automatically. He was running up $1,000 bills every month. He was trying to get them to notice him, and it didn't work. It was so sad. It was so sad. It was like his parents were not involved. It's like, you know, whatever. That's neglect. So hurting our children with words perhaps is abuse, and letting our children do whatever they want is neglect. That's also bad. It's also terrible. It's also not parenting. You'll say, well, you don't give us a break. That's right. As Dr. Laura would say before she got into trouble, you had them, you got to take care of them. It's hard work. It's very hard work, and that means saying no, but saying no and firm. Occasionally saying, allowing them to negotiate you into a yes, but only occasionally. And lots of no's. Lots of yeses, but lots of no's. Lots of no's. And not feeling guilty. You know, the reason why first children are often so hard is because parents feel like their kids have to like them all the time. Your kids don't have to like you. And they'll love you more if they don't like you all the time. Because you're not their friend, you're their parent. You know? You don't have to agree with them, I'm the parent. I remember when one of our kids was 16, we had a whole discussion about something. And I said to him, and you know, at that point I was, you know, I had a good relationship with him. I said to him, listen, you're 16, I hear what you're saying. When I was your age, I probably felt the same way, but we're going to overrule you on this one. And you know what? We'll talk about it again when you're 18 if you want, but it's not going to happen. You know, whatever it was, I didn't even remember what it was, but I remember that he was so upset. But, you know, he's a special kid. 2 or 3 days later, he came over to me. He said, okay, I got it. I thought about it. I let it go. I got it. Most kids don't do that. He's a very special young man. I got it. Most of us don't get that reward. With my other four, I don't get that. We don't get that, you know. But you know what? That's what it means. That's why you get paid the big bucks as parents. You know what the big bucks are? Sometimes nachas. Right? So we had one of my kids, my oldest, was very difficult during the young years. He actually was a wonderful teenager. He did his teenage years from the age of 3 to 9. I don't understand it. He got a lot of junk out then. And the payback, the big bucks, was last August when my wife and I walked with him down to the chuppah when he got married. You know, and I looked over his head at my wife, and we made eye contact as we walked down the aisle with him, and remembered what age 8 was like. You know, yeah, that's the deal. That's the deal. If we do it right, most times we can get nachas. Not always. Because kids are their own people. We can't take full responsibility. Kids make their own decisions. Our job as parents is to do the best. And the best is to build a relationship with the child that the child knows you're the parent. And we have values. And if the values are based on Torah, then perhaps that's, you have a structure that you could point to. And you could say, this is what we do in this house, but it only works if the parents live that way too. So then they know it's sincere. A young man once told me that he stopped keeping Shabbos when he was 9. Because his father talked the talk, but didn't walk the walk. Said he caught his father watching TV once on a Friday night. And he said it was over. He actually liked his father, but he said, but don't tell me this is real, because I know it's bull. So he didn't, you know, it's a scary thing, but our children watch us. I had a teacher, a rabbi, he used to say this very little that we actually have to teach to our children directly in terms to character. We don't have to tell them a whole lot. We just have to act that way. If we want our children to be respectful human beings, then we have to treat other people and them like with respect. You know that? It used to be that poem that was on the office of the pediatrician's wall always. Children learn what they live. You know, I'm so old. But this idea of children, it's a beautiful, beautiful poem. Look it up online somewhere. It's called Children Where They Live. And it's this idea over and over again. Children learn what they live. In other words, the way we treat them, the way they watch. It's modeling. Most of parenting is modeling. You know, parents brought in their 14-year-old daughter to me and said their daughter is totally out of control. When she loses her temper, she's a complete mess. So I sent the daughter out of the room for a minute, and I turned to the parents and said, how do you guys act when you're really angry? So, of course, they both turn purple, and they say, okay, but, you know, we lose our temper, but we have reason to lose it. Well, our kids learn from us. Kids that have parents with high anxiety typically have high anxiety. Kids who have parents with anger problems often have anger problems, too. That doesn't mean... But you can have parents who are perfectly fine in this and still have kids with these issues. But it's more times than not, but if you have parents with these issues, you're pretty sure going to have kids with these issues. Okay, two more things quickly, and then we'll take comments. The importance of living with joy in your house. I cannot say enough, I don't have a lot to say about it, but I cannot emphasize enough about how powerful it is, the magic of laughing in a family. Families that laugh together. It's so powerful. My kids will remember times, oftentimes at my expense, of that we laughed. They remember we went on vacation and I slid into the water and I walked out of the water with mud all over me. And they'll remember it for all time. Their favorite story of all time is about keeping perspective, keeping a sense of humor, keeping perspective. Well, they'll say to me, even as a joke, because they're so sick of it, because they've heard me say to parenting, you know, they heard some of my tapes. So we once went up to northern Wisconsin in the summer for a family vacation. I'm a big believer in, if you can afford it, to spend at least a few days, at least, if you can, a week, but if not, at least 3 or 4 days every summer, just you. No friends or families. Not even grandparents necessarily, unless they're part of the family unit, right? Just parents or parent and children to bond together without any homework in the way, without cleaning up your room, you know, as an ongoing thing. We did this over the years. We would take a week or 6 days every single summer and do something. And part of our vacation is always to do a little bit of renting a boat for an hour or two. So 1 year we rented a pontoon. I think at that point we had 4 children. We rented a pontoon, and somebody mentioned Gilligan's Island before. That was in the other class. Yeah, a little bit like Gilligan, we set out for a 2-hour cruise. The weather was perfect when we set out. So we had this pontoon. It wasn't that expensive. I think we took it for 4 hours. So we went out for 2 hours. And then on the way back, a storm from hell erupted. Okay, so my oldest at the time was, I don't know, maybe 10, very rambunctious, was very much enjoying the storm. My wife had a baby in her arms, so she couldn't. I'm driving the boat. The boat is literally strong winds, a little bit of lightning thrown in for fear, and my oldest one is having the time of his life. He's jumping up and down. He's throwing things off the boat. I'm afraid he's going to go over, right? So at that point, you know, he's like, I'm about to blow because I'm afraid. There's a lot of fear here. I don't know, God, I'm going to walk. You know, my wife's holding a baby in terms of this. Although pontoons typically don't turn over, but you never know. So at that point, we were in a small town of Wisconsin where they hadn't seen a lot of Jews before. So when we go to places like that, we typically, instead of wearing yarmulkes, we would wear baseball caps, me and the boys. So we didn't have our yarmulkes. We all had baseball caps. My son's, you know, jumping up and down, and a wind comes and blows his baseball cap off his head. So then I lost it. I started yelling at him. What are you doing? It's dangerous. You crazy? What are you doing? Just all the things I'm embarrassed of. Terrible. Terrible. I'm in the middle of yelling at him when a wind comes and takes my baseball cap. Right in the water. At that moment, it all got quiet. It's like the whole world stopped. The birds stopped. Everybody wanted to see. It's like, you know, it's like they couldn't believe it. My son, you know, it's like that at me. My baseball, so we have 2 baseball caps sinking in the water then, right? At that point, you know, I look at them, they look at me, we burst out laughing. This is a family memory, not the screaming part. But for years, when they felt, 5 minutes, okay, for years, I'll take questions in a moment, for years when they felt that Daddy needed a reminder of keeping your perspective, chill out, Dad, one of the smart alecky sons would say to me, baseball cap. And it would stop me cold. Because, yeah, kids know when we're overreacting. We're allowed to react. We're allowed to even overreact at times. But at times. It cannot be parenting by overreaction. It has to be this sense of that this is a relationship and I'm building it for eternity. I'm building it over a lifetime. Last thing, So for this thing of joy is to find times to laugh. And that could be on a holiday, but still in the fifth thing. The holidays to make them light, to be joyous, to have lots of singing, to have music in the house, to have laughter, to be a little light, and to not take ourselves so seriously all the time. To be less heavy ourselves. Families where the parents are heavy, there's a depression or a darkness in the home. It doesn't mean everything should be a joke. Lots of things that are serious, but also room for lightness and joy. Last thing is to find time, and this is, you know, you're going to give me a hard time with this, but this is where I'm going to turn to you. I'm telling you how hard it is to, you know, everything you need to do as a parent. I'm saying you need to find time for yourself. You need to find time to recharge. You need to find time to be able to. So somebody said to me, I got 7 children. You're telling me to find time for yourself? For myself? And I'll say to her, listen, what would happen if you had 8 children? Would you be able to say, I'm sorry, I can't take care of one this week? You know, my limit is 7. Well, you should have thought of that before, if you know what I mean. But separate from that, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that. You know that that's what it means to be a parent. So I'm telling you that part of parenting is to add on 2 more children. And one child is called marriage, and one child is called self. You need to find time for yourself. Maybe not as much time as each child needs to get, but some time. If you could grab, you know, a half hour a day, fine. Most people can't. If you could grab an hour or 2 a week, then grab it. Couples need to find time to go away together. If you could pull that off, if you have somebody, anybody that will watch your child, drop them off at the fire department. If you have somebody that could watch your children go away, even if it's only for a night. People say to me, oh, a vacation just for a night is not worth anything. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. As a marriage and for yourself. If you find time, we need to find time to work out. If you could do that, whether it's time for prayer, time for learning, time for music, time for a hobby, something. Something that gives you the ability to recharge. You know, oftentimes women give me the hardest time with this. I can't, I have no time, I can't, I have permission. My husband finds time for himself. Or not. Sometimes it's the other way. Find time for self. Find time for self to recharge. And find time for your marriage. Every day in your marriage to find time to connect with each other. Find time for sexuality with your spouse. With your spouse. Let me clarify that. Right. Find time. Find time to keep your marriage fresh and young and light. Yeah, it's powerful. And the more time you have for yourself, then the more time and more energy you have for your children. And the less resentful and angry you are. The world is filled with angry, resentful parents because they're overwhelmed because they never have time for themselves. Well, I can't. So do it. Well, what am I going to do? Who's going to do homework with my child? Your child won't do homework that night or that week. Yeah, if your teachers don't like it, too bad. Too bad. It's not going to kill them. It's not. Your kids will be very happy. Everybody gains here. Everybody gains. All right, questions or comments? Yes. Right. The best thing to do is to develop some allies among some of your kids, friends, parents. Right. You can get away with that. You could. It's hard. Yes. Yes. You have to like choose your issues. If they're going to mixed parties where everyone knows there's drugs and boy-girl stuff, then too bad. That's not acceptable in our family. I don't care what you say. And you will not be hurt for that, although your kids will be really angry at you. But if everyone else's parents is 1 o'clock curfew and you're assisting on 11 o'clock curfew on vacation, maybe there's room for adjustment there. Maybe. You need to, like, choose your things. You know, safety, you know, religion. How, you know, it's a problem. When parents tell me that they're the religious, and everyone else in the class have different rules, I know it's going to be complicated. Some kids will rise to the occasion and actually feel good about their self-esteem and saying, I could be different than other ones. And other kids will be a mess. You know, other kids will be a mess. I'm working with somebody right now where that kid is just, I don't want to be different from anyone else. My parents shouldn't have sent me to this school. And she's right. She has a good point to that. What are you doing? Why did you put me in this situation? I'm not strong enough to be the rabbi here. I don't want to be the rabbi. I want to be like everybody else. And that's a legitimate issue. So, you know, that's hard. Some other kids, you know, rise to it. I mean, you know, it's interesting, a study of why some yeah and some no. I'm not sure. Yes. And then, yes, you. And then you. But. Right. That's why I said before, you could do everything perfectly, and sometimes the child's temperament. I mean, the child is his own person, too. How much what?
The parents,
No. I mean, it depends on what the issue is. But, you know, probably that's where you need to get professional intervention. Some third person that could be neutral here to negotiate what's appropriate or not. Because once a parent is in it for years with a child, it's hard to see clearly. Because now it's like a power struggle already. It's like you don't trust each other so much anymore once it's been going on. Then it's probably worth it to go even just one time or two times to a professional. It doesn't mean you have to go on for years necessarily. Just to kind of negotiate a way of talking to each other. I think we're in dinner time, so I'm okay to stay if you want to, but, you know, why don't we call it, thank you all for coming, and thanks for...